And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this off-season mailbag edition where I put out the bat signal on Gopher Illustrated. I think we ended up getting over 50-something questions from our beloved Gopher 24/7 subscribers. But before we get to that, Luke, how are things with you?
I'm doing all right. You're right. It is the off season. We are doing a mailbag edition. I want to set some ground rules here for the mailbag edition. Number one, we put out the mailbag questions to Gopher Illustrated members. Obviously, this is your full-time gig, so we make an effort to give them preferential treatment for obvious reasons. So if you're not a Gopher Illustrated member and you didn't get to submit a mailbag question, I think you know what to do. I think we've said this a bazillion times, but you can become a Gopher Illustrated member. Number two, we're not going to get to all 50. Some of them are good. Some of them are hot garbage, guys. Just going to put it out there. Some of these questions are just hot garbage.
I haven't peeked at a single one yet. I want it to be fresh.
This is like 100% backwards, because usually I don't look at anything and you've looked at everything. So this is a good role reversal. Also, I want to note, this is important. We are 100 days away. We are recording here on May 25th. We're 100 days away from live football Gopher football at TCF Bank Stadium. Against the Ohio State University. So this makes a good reason to record a podcast, I think, even in the off season.
I think you're right. I think it's hopefully 100 days from now, it's going to be a near capacity, if not full capacity stadium too, with how things can continue to trend here in the state of Minnesota with COVID vaccinations and everything. And, you know, I think last I saw, I think Minnesota is now over 50% in terms of adults vaccinated, which is awesome. And I know Luke and I are vaccinated, so we'll see how that continues to trend. But I'm hoping 100 days from now, when I walk or when I get over to TCF Bank Stadium and for that Thursday night game, the atmosphere is something electric like it was for that TCU game just a few years back. And I'm hoping that with a year off, with no fans in the stands, that they all can bring it 100 days from now, Luke.
Yeah, it should be pretty fun. Hopefully, I mean, a lot can change from now to then. Just if you haven't paid attention to the news, look at India. So a lot can change, but
I'm such a Debbie Downer.
You know, it's part of my job, man. I talked to a gal today in India. I'm not even kidding. So we do a decent amount of work in India with some pharma companies, and she told me that for 7 days in a row, she directly knew people that died due to COVID. 7 consecutive days in a row. That's ridiculous.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Yeesh. And then, on a lighter note, all right. How's home ownership been for you? I know I'm coming up now.
Home ownership.
I say that because I'm coming up on now, I think it's a year coming up next week or something.
Yeah.
That I've owned a home. And how are things around the house on your side of Roseville compared to the side of Roseville?
They're loud. My 2-year-old kind of runs the show, and we have number 2 on the way. So that's probably news.
Well, congrats, buddy.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I think I've told you this before.
You have. I just wanted to act surprised.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's great. So we have number 2 on the way. Another boy. He is also unnamed and probably will be unnamed until after he's born. Because that's just how we roll. So obviously we're excited about baby boy Buer number 2. That is his code name right now. But yeah, it's good. It's crazy. But wouldn't change it for anything.
Any projects around the house lately?
At the moment, no. No projects at the moment. We have foregone the garden and given you all that responsibility this year.
You're the worst. Because just because you have small children and another one on the way doesn't mean... See, I'm looking out of my office here, looking at a beautiful garden I got. Got some broccoli, some peppers, some tomatoes. I got some beans that haven't been eaten by the squirrels yet. And I also have learned a lot about asparagus, by the way. I kid you not. I got like some 5-foot-tall asparagus. Didn't know I was supposed to harvest it like a month ago when it was coming out of the ground. So I guess I'm just going to wait for it to seed at this point. And then have it come back down to reality. But, you know, for house projects, I just feel like I've constantly been doing them. which is great and bad at the same time.
Isn't that home ownership in a nutshell?
I mean, you tell me. I've only been doing this now for a year, but like I just the latest project I had was the kitchen where I replaced the countertops with some walnut butcher block, and then I had to sand them and stain them and cut them and all that. And then we just got our backsplash with some subway tile done, and it's just like I hate starting multiple projects at the same time because I'm like one of those people that's OCD that if I start something, I have to finish it before I can move on. And I'm learning that that's not kind of the way projects work anymore, Luke.
It's, you live in them.
I want them to work that way, but they don't exactly work that way.
Yeah, but you live in them now. Yeah. And they never end, just for the record. And some of the projects are surprises, right? Like you didn't foresee them coming. Those are my favorite.
Yeah, like when your water heater just decides it's 19 years old and you thought you yeah. could get something out of it. Nope. Gonna have to buy a brand new one, put it in, yada yada yada. But
yeah,
I had to get all these things done because you know what I'm doing next week, Luke? Heading up to Lake of the Woods to get some walleye fishing.
So
in, baby.
If you are a Gopher Illustrated member, you know what that means.
it's the worst timing. It's the worst timing because normally, so I take this trip up to Bidette. It's like the first weekend of June every year, and I've been doing it for I feel like 6-8 years now. It's a father-son trip that we take. And normally, on a normal year, it doesn't conflict with any Gopher camp things in terms of me being able to attend things. It's usually like the Sunday afternoon of that first weekend. Well, they have a camp June 2nd where, as far as I know, I'm going to be there. I don't think the Gophers have told me otherwise, but I don't get to, you know, normally we leave like Wednesday morning, 7 a.m., get up there, get everything set up, get some night fishing in before Thursday. Well, I'm going to be at the complex until like 9 p.m. And then I get to start the 5.5-6 hour drive north, get into Bidette at like 3 in the morning, crash on the couch for 2.5 hours and then get some fishing in. But yeah, that's where with this dead period finally coming to an end on June 1, I mean, it's nuts. I mean, I've been talking to coaches over there today and yesterday, and they're pumped to get back on the road, but they're also like, this thing's going to be insane. I mean, I've got the list of camps that they're going to be attending between PJ Fleck camps and satellite camps. And I kid you not. I mean, I'm looking at it right now and they're going to be in Georgia, in Missouri, in SMU, at Florida State, at Illinois, Houston. I mean, it's all these guys have told me they've looked at their wives or their significant others and said, hey, June 1 until like, say, I don't know, June 22nd, probably not going to see me much. I'll be on the road or I'll be recruiting, but that's a love. That's what they like to do. And that's where, as Luke led off with, it's going to be a crazy time of June where I expect, I mean, the way PJ Fleck recruiting has gone historically, I mean, we're looking at 8+ commits probably in the month of June. So with it today being, oh, I don't know, May 25th, and it's 100 pennies for your first 30 days. And I just told you, I don't know, that June 22nd to June 25th or June 1st to late June mark is going to be pretty crazy. If you're cheap and you just want a really good deal, I'd encourage finally pulling the trigger on that GI membership. So it's going to be, you know, the other thing about this trip, Luke, is I'd mentioned like normally like there isn't a Fleck camp, but there's like satellite camps. And so one of the fun challenges for me at night is, you know, I usually get a call or two from some sources once camps are over and they'll tell me what's going on and we'll go back and forth. I know it's such like a first world weird problem to have, but it's like you're up on a fishing trip and you got to remain sober enough to be able to comprehend what you're being told on the phone and be able to like have them know like you're not three sheets to the moon. I mean, I'm gonna have a couple 1, 2, 3, don't get me wrong, but it's you got to make sure you can stay at a good place long enough to take those phone calls. I know what a terrible thing that I can't have a couple 2, 3, 4, 5 until I wait for my evening phone calls, right, Luke?
Well, maybe you just need to manage expectations and then you'll be fine.
Yeah, so it'll be a lot of fun though, because I've been waiting for recruiting. I've been waiting to see these guys live, I know the coaches have as well, and being able to have host them on official visits as well. So it's going to be some fun. I'll tell you that much.
All right. So let's jump into the mailbag questions. And I'll do my best to get to as many of these as possible. But there's no promises. And like I said, some of these are hot trash. I'm not going to call any of them out in particular, but
you're going to have to tell me once we stop recording some of these questions
they're not so,
you think are hot trash.
They're not so bad. But I'll jump right here. I argue that this was maybe the best one to see if I can find it. Oh, there it is. It's from Gopher All Paul. He asks, what returning 2020 starter or starters have the highest chance of getting usurped in 2021?
Oh, see, this is...
That's a good question.
That is. I'd say defensively, two guys immediately come to mind. One would be Mariano Sorry Marin, because I know
For
Rossi...
obvious reasons.
I know as much as Rossi appreciates everything Mariano does for that room behind the scenes in terms of being a vocal leader and really stepping up in the weight room to help out the younger guys, he's also not naive and knows that this defense, his defense, needs to play a lot better. And that's where, with Jack Gibbons now in the room, the Abilene Christian transfer, who they thought had a pretty good spring, with Braylon Oliver now a lot more confident today than he was when spring ball started in terms of believing in that knee, and he's playing more to what we saw in 2019. You've also got a guy like Cody Lindenberg in his second year at the linebacker position. And you've also got guys like Josh Ani, Quan Burns, and the list goes on and on there. I think Mariano, certainly, if he's not playing well early in the season, you're going to see him out of there. I also think you have a guy like Jordan Howden or Tyler Newbin, where it depends on how Michael Dixon kind of comes back to light here. But if he can come back and be 100% for the start of fall camp, I mean, I can tell you without a doubt in my mind, I know Joe Harris-Simiak loves that kid, and he knows that Newbin and Howden need to play better. And if they're not playing better, then Dixon's going to get his shot. But that reminds me, Luke, there were a couple news things I wanted us to dive into first before we did this.
Yeah. I guess. Okay. News things in particular. The always ever evolving transfer portal. News sure. today, Abner Dubar, we hardly knew you. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's out. Keontae Shad, we knew you a little bit better, but you are gone also. So we probably should at least at a minimum touch on those two to start.
Yeah, I want to make sure it's brief because, again, I know folks are here for me to answer questions and you to answer questions. But Keontae Shad played a lot of defensive tackle for Minnesota the last two seasons. I believe he played in 17 games. And as I had been mentioning, most of the spring on GI or on this podcast, Minnesota's going to rotate like 6-7 defensive tackles. And I'm being like dead-ass serious about that. Like even Niles Pinckney, Val Martin, Rashad Chaney, D'Angelo Carter, forgetting somebody, Micah Dutredway. I mean, even Logan Richter in there. And that's not even counting Keontae Shad there. So Keontae wanted some more playing time, some more consistent playing time, and that's where he's going to be heading to Oregon State. And then, as Luke said, we got news today that Abner Dubar, 2020 safety that Minnesota signed, hadn't seen the field quite yet, was very raw still from talking with Harris-Simiak. He has put his name into the transfer portal as well. So a couple guys that aren't going to be on the fall roster. And then we also got to talk about that the Buffalo coaching job. So the Buffalo yes. job becomes open because their coach takes the University of Kansas job.
Yes.
Not your guy, Barry Kill and Tracy Clay is getting the band back together down in Lawrence.
But do you think that was even real? I don't buy that.
I want to believe it, but I don't believe it. If that makes sense. I would have loved to have seen that just because I know that it was something that Kill and Clay's and that whole band of brothers had talked about, that if things didn't work out at Minnesota when they were here, that, you know what, they can just go to Kansas, have that job for 10 years and then retire or something. And that's where Lance Leopold leaves. And the final two for that job were number one, who ended up taking it, Mo Lindquist, who is a former Minnesota defensive back coach who I've heard
he was here for a hot minute.
Yeah, maybe Mark Hoyle has his name on a list if something were to happen with PJ Fleck. But the other number two option who was very close to getting it was Joe Harris-Simiak, Minnesota's co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach. And boy, would that have been interesting because, you know, from poking around behind the scenes there, if Harris-Simiak would have taken it, and I think, first of all, I need to say the timing of this couldn't have been more worse.
For Minnesota, yes, if he takes it. Yeah.
If things would have happened, because you look at it and it's May. I mean, this happened, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago. And most college coaching Vegas vacancies had already been filled in January, February.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where if Harris-Simiak would have gotten that job, I think there would have been a very real possibility that maybe Matt Simon and Chad Wilt would have left with Harris-Simiak, depending on how things would have kind of played out behind the scenes, to be coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it would have been. Can you imagine looking for three brand new position coaches in late May? And that would not have been ideal for Minnesota. No. So Harris-Simiak comes in second where Lindquist gets the job. But I think that should just kind of tell you that after this 21 season, we'll see what comes available. But I think Harris-Simiak is going to be in very high demand. So this might be the last year with Joe as the co-defensive coordinator, because Joe Rossi also just got an extension as the defensive coordinator here.
Okay, let's play a quick game here, okay?
Let's do it.
So for those of you playing at home, so PJ Fleck, you, but also those that are listening, PJ Fleck came here. Mo Lindquist was on his first staff, correct?
Right.
He was at Minnesota for, I believe, exactly 1 year or maybe two. Was it 1 year he got the associate head coach?
I think it was only 1 year was here.
But he was only here 1 year. And now a lot of people complain that there's a lot of turnover in PJ Fleck's staff, right? But here's a guy that has climbed the ladder, now has a MAC head coaching job. Ryan, can you name all of the stops that Mo Lindquist has had since he was here at Minnesota?
I think so, because he went to Texas A&M for a couple of years because they offered him a lot more money. He's from Texas, made a lot of sense. Help recruit Dalen Wright to Texas A&M, help recruit Dalen Wright to Minnesota. Because then he got the D-back shop with the Cowboys for a year? Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
And then Dallas decided to part ways. And then he was the Michigan defensive backs coach for like a month, maybe two. And then he took this Buffalo job. So it's been quite the rise for Mr. Lindquist going from,
Okay. Okay, hold on. I want to play this. I want to see how far forward you can go now in history. So you were correct in that from his coaching experience, he went from Minnesota defensive backs to Texas A&M corners so he was there a couple years, I think, and then he went to Michigan directly. Now he is the head coach at Buffalo. Okay, but going forward, Can you say where he was before Minnesota?
Oh, I know he was at Mississippi State.
Ding, 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 2016.
I think he might have been at Buffalo before, but that's about the rest that I got. And I know he played at, I think he played at Baylor.
Yep, so 2015 and 2014, he was at Iowa State.
Okay.
And then 2013, he was at Buffalo. 2012, he was at Buffalo. 2009 to 2011 was his longest stop in his college coaching career at James Madison, where he coached safeties.
James Madison. I would have not have picked that one up.
And then 2008, he was at, Valdosta?
He's trying to say, Valdosta State.
I've never seen that word in my life. Valdosta State. And then Baylor. Yep. And then Baylor, where he was a grad assistant after playing from 2003 to 2006. So if you want to climb the ladder in college football, right, he spent almost a year, sometimes only 2 years at stops. This happens all over the place, everybody. Like, it's just not that weird.
No.
The thing that was weird was Tracy Clay's and Jerry Kilstaff's that stayed together so long. That's the weird thing.
They're the exception, not the rule. So we'll see what kind of happens after this offseason. But back to the mailbag. That's where I'm going to, I guess let's alternate a little bit. I'm going to pick one and you pick one. So
okay.
Fence Jumpers, which by the way, I don't know if you read why his name was Fence Jumpers.
No.
It's a fantastic story involving him quitting mid-game on a softball game because he was so mad. So he asked, look into your crystal ball to the completion of 2021. Who are the three players that you would identify that took the biggest jump in contributions from last year to this year?
I get, okay, can we do a draft of these?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, number one, I'm going to take Daniel Jackson. I think that I think he's going to take the biggest jump. He'll be the number two, but Chris Ottman-Bell is going to get a lot of attention, so he'll get more targets this year. I'm high on Daniel Jackson.
Is this where I get to get my first Brevin Span Ford plug in? Because
yes.
I'm telling you, it ain't quieting it down behind the scenes, and it ain't quieting it down for me. And it's kind of a laughing, I shouldn't say a laughing joke between me and some of the guys on the staff, because I'm telling you, if Brevin just is healthy for 13 games, dude's going to catch 25 balls for 400 yards and like six touchdowns, which, yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot. But when you factor in that 25 catches for one tight end would be like the most tight end catches since Max Williams, it's quite a bit. So that's where I'll go Brevin Span Ford. Here, you pick a guy on defense now.
Okay, so hold on. Can they be a freshman?
Sure, they can be whoever the heck you want.
Okay, it doesn't have to be someone who's already been in the program to make the biggest jump. Okay.
Say not.
Okay. I'm going to take, is it Justin Wally? What's sure. the first name?
Wally.
They've hyped him up both on being what? Mississippi State's, or the state of Mississippi's Mr. Football.
He's
and on Mr. the Twitter Football machine. And I'm just going to go that basically purely on social media / media hype. I'm going to take Justin Wally on defense.
Last year to this year in terms of contribution. See, I want to take a corner. I mean, I guess I'll have to say Terrell Smith, because I want to believe that maybe this offseason it finally clicked for him. And, I mean, we've talked about it at length on this podcast. He has all the physical tools in the world to be a top 100 pick.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's 6'1", he had something stupid in high school, like a 10.3 100 meters. He's among the fastest on the team. He's going to run a 4.3 if it ever comes to that. But I want it to come to that, if that makes sense. Like, I want it to happen for Terrell Smith, because if it does,
mm-hmm.
well, then Minnesota's corners are going to look a lot better than they do today. But I'll also tell you, Minnesota's still heavily exploring the transfer market for both a corner and a safety, and that was before the Abner Dubar news. So I want it to happen for Terrell Smith, so I guess that'll be my pick.
Okay. Let's do special teams now that we've both done one offense, one defense. Mm-hmm. I don't even know this gentleman's name, but I'm taking the kicker that is transferring in because I didn't look this up.
Matthew Trickett, who I believe, so the Kent State, yeah. So he was the MAC Player of the Year in 2019 on special teams. I think he moved in today
okay.
or this weekend, so he'll be on campus. Go ahead.
I'll take him on special teams. You can't. I mean, he wasn't on the team, but I gotta imagine it can't get worse, right? So at least at the kicker position, it's got to get better. So I'm gonna take him.
Oh my gosh! So I actually they released a clip on Gopher Football of PJ Flex Sights and Sounds, and I had somebody send it to me, and they said, you know, I immediately thought of you, and I go, what do you mean? I go, watch the clip and you'll know immediately. And it's PJ Fleck talking to Clay Geary, telling him, hey, I don't want you to fair catch it. I want you to make the first man miss, something along those lines. And I just started dying. I'm just like, yes, PJ, we all want that. Like, so I'm going to take a returner, and I'm going to guess that it's going to be either Trey Potts or Justin Wally. And I just want to see like a good kick return. I don't want to see Cam Wiley out there. So I will say Trey Potts goes from being a non-factor on kick return last year to being one of the better ones in the Big Ten.
All right. I like this question from MN Villain a lot. So I'm curious to get your input here. What is more important in upping our recruiting to the next level, putting talent into the NFL or on-field success?
Winning 100% of the time. 100% of the time. Because, yeah, NFL, I mean, I don't want to tell you that putting guys in the NFL doesn't matter. It does matter because recruits notice that.
They don't have to be mutually exclusive, right? I think there's probably some of this, you know, where they're connected pretty tightly. Because if you're winning, you probably have guys in the NFL. They're getting more exposure, etc. Right. But I am curious your thoughts on this in more detail.
Yeah, I think it's winning because kids want to go to a place where they can compete for meaningful football games, and they want to compete and be on the national spotlight. And now we've seen that in recent years, in the last couple of years with College Game Day, been hearing a couple of times. You obviously had the magical 2019 season, and the amount of pub that this team got was spectacular, especially compared to recent years. And that's where, if you want to recruit better guys, you're going to have a class or two where you're not the most highly rated of guys. Now, Minnesota's been trending upwards. I think Gobi would tell you that. He's got all the stats and graphs, and I saw him today that Minnesota is still continuing to trend up from Jerry Kill to Tracy Clays to PJ Fleck. It's continuing to be on the up and up, but I just know that folks are, they want to see the fours and the fives, and good luck, because the fours and the fives go to the helmet schools, because what do the helmet schools normally do on every given year? Win a lot of football games, mm-hmm. or they're in the national spotlight all the time. Now,
I just want to note here, I think that there's a difference here, because I think this is just comparing sports, and you know, these are the two most highly profitable sports in college football, or in college sports in the NCAA. But I think in basketball, I think it's more important that you put guys in the NBA. I really do.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. No, I'm not an elite basketball recruiting mind or basketball.
I'm not either. But
Ryan James would be. But I would tell you that on football, like if you're going to become, you know, Iowa consistently, where you're winning 8-9 football games, or Wisconsin, you're winning 8-9 football games every year, that's what kids want to go play for in 2021. They don't want to go play for Illinois and win 3-4 football games. And I mean, yeah, you can go play in the Big Ten, but you want to play in meaningful Big Ten games come November. And I think Minnesota will be doing that in 2021, but if Minnesota wants to take that next step in recruiting, I think they need to take the next step in 2021 on the field. And that means competing legitimately for the second time in 3 years for a Big Ten West title. And that means you're going to have to split at least with one of your rivals in Wisconsin and Iowa, and make that, because those final three games are going to be quite something to end the year with, I believe it's Iowa and then Indiana and then Wisconsin. So I would say on the field performance, Mr. Buehr.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I buy it. I don't have any input on that. You're way closer to the recruiting side of football than I am. I do follow it, but there are just so many names. It's a lot to stay on top of. And if you follow beyond the Gophers, like, kudos to you, because that's even exponentially more names, which leads me to my next question. What other 247 writers do you share the most recruiting info with?
And it can't be Alan True. Alan and I talk all the time because he knows things and I want to know things. And I think he is one of the smartest people in this weird profession of mine. And I love to glean anything I can from Mr. True, which is probably the nicest thing I'll ever say to him, because I don't want his head to get too big. But I would say it depends kind of on the recruiting battles that Minnesota's been fighting. And I'd say probably Jeremy Warner from Illinois, Buck from Iowa. I do text and DM with Evan Flood from Wisconsin. I guess it just kind of depends what I need to know or what people want to know from me. But I wouldn't say there's a ton. I mean, there is sharing that goes on, certainly, but it's more so not usually between the team writers. It's usually me bugging Alan, or me bugging Steve Wiltfong, or me bugging Brandon Huffman about, hey, you saw this guy, what'd you think? Hey, you talked to this kid, what'd you think? And then we kind of go from there.
Sure. Sure. Out of curiosity, though, any big 247 guys you got big beefs with? You want to put it on? You want to put it on a recording out there into the ether?
I have never met the Iowa guys in person. I've never met Evan Flood in person. Jeremy Warner and I have had some beverages together. There really isn't anybody I don't see eye to eye with. I mean, I wish, again, I want to meet these guys in person.
So, I like to stir the pot. But
I know you do.
Okay, sorry.
All right. A.E. Richards says, because, again, we can't, it's kind of been the elephant in the room here. I would love to know the behind-the-scenes thoughts from the coaching staff about the WCCO stuff.
Oh.
They are pissed because... And I agree with them because here's kind of their point to me. You think this runs in Madison? You think that story runs in Madison, Iowa City, Lincoln, pick your Big Ten West school where, well, which first and foremost, you know what the funniest part about that story was to me? All of the photos that they showed, they were mine.
No, I know.
And you know how much permission they asked for them? None. Zero. Yeah.
They didn't even give you a courtesy. Did you do a DCM takedown?
I did not do a DCM. I don't want DCM credit on those photos now either at that point, because if they were to show those photos and it says Ryan Burns 24/7 Sports, the staff wouldn't like that, because then the staff would think I'm in on it. And I've already had to explain. I mean, it's already just a cluster, but it's just, they just, it's a non-story to them, and it's a non-story to the players as well, where each one of those guys, it's tough for me to, again, each situation was different, but knowing what I know from the Grant Norton thing and the Alex Riedelsberger thing and the Nolan Edmonds thing, like, that's, I mean, it's football. It's a non-thing to me, and it's a non-thing to them. It's a non-thing to the players, and to say, I mean, I can guarantee you, because I was talking to somebody today, one of the recruit, a recruit that they've had rival coaching staffs from maybe states east of here and states south of here send that story to prospective recruits. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, I mean, it hurts. And that's where Minnesota's had to address it. And I know Fleck's probably going to make a phone call to a certain guy tonight and have to address it with their family. It's just, they think it's, like, what's the point? Like, there is no story here. And it's just, they're incredibly fed up with it. And, you know, I was texting with some people over there, and I was like, see, I was talking to some people, and I go, CCO's never getting in that door again, are they? And the guy texts me back, and he says, they were never in the door to begin with. When was the last time you saw somebody from CCO at a press conference or a practice?
Mm-hmm.
I go, I'm thinking to myself, I've never seen Mike Max there, and I don't even know who else they would send there. So it's just,
you make a comment, in that, you know, this doesn't happen in Madison or Iowa City. Well, two things. I don't know a lot about the media landscape, but just looking at the general media landscape here, how many television stations are there? How many radio stations? How much competition purely is there here in the Twin Cities? There's a lot, right?
Right.
And they hunted this thing, or, you know, they shopped this thing around, that professor or previous professor.
Which, how that guy got that platform from Liz Collin is, and, you know, and again, so Liz Collin, she tried, I mean, she was messaging with people at the U about trying to get certain information, and they were giving it to her, and then she would make comments, and they're like, yeah, that's normal for college football. It's like, she doesn't know anything, or she made it be portrayed in that story like she didn't know anything about college football. Like, the 2018 class, like, 11 guys are gone from it. Yeah, that's, like, if you look at the 2018 class across Power 5 college football, I'd probably tell you 40% of the class, for various reasons, is no longer there.
And I think, I would add that I think that that's going to be more common with a transfer portal, in that it might be exactly even higher, right?
Or they try to make a big deal out of the medical retirements. Well, what they didn't tell you, and what the U wanted her to portray, which she didn't, is that, did you know PJ Fleck medical retirements year over year are below average for the last, I don't know, 15 years compared to his predecessors? At the U or nationally?
Oh, okay.
At the U.
Yeah.
At the U. So Minnesota has been below average.
Yeah, they have no way to track that nationally.
I would be hard pressed to believe these universities, which everything is under nuclear code lockdown, would share that information. So it's like, yeah, Minnesota's had some medical retirements, but also compared to his predecessors, he's below average compared. And it's just a bunch of hoopla and a bunch of just hogwash. And like, I think folks know by now, if there's a story like a, that had some validity to it, I'd tell you there's some validity to it.
And I
think there ain't no validity to any of this crap.
And I think the fact that it's not being reported, I mean, okay. So when I have to educate, well, I shouldn't say it this way. If I have, these are not my parents, but if I have family members that I have to say, you know, if they're spamming me with some, you know, right or left.
Sure. What are you on Facebook?
No, you know, whatever it is, they're spamming me with email. You know, it's kind of like, well, look at your source. Do you see anybody else reporting it? Okay. Are they reporting it? Cool. Let's look for consistencies between the stories across the different news outlets. Those are probably the facts, right? The fact. Right. Now, I'm not trying to say that there isn't any fact to what she reported, because there probably is to some extent. But the fact that no other news station here in town reported it, period, probably says something about the validity of the underlying story.
Like, was there something, I mean, were there truths to some of the things? I mean, yes,
sure, but
again,
absolutely.
Truths need context around them. Like, Minnesota's had, I don't know what they said in that, like, six medical retirements.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay. Compared to what? Like, because the person watching the WCCO news, they probably don't know jack squat about, like, how that relates to what college football is in 2021. So
right.
I just wish there would have been more context applied to certain elements of that story.
Yeah. I don't know how their editorial process works at WCCO, and I don't want to say that it's purely her, because it could have been, you know, more people. But the thing I want to argue is that they control the narrative at the end of the day, right? As a news organization. So they got to dictate what was in and what was out, rather than the broader media landscape, you know, getting a say in reporting conversely. So they control absolutely everything. And that's the thing that's probably disappointing, right?
And the other part of that question from A.E. Richards was, do you think, or if you or others around the program being given less access because of it? I mean, it's not helping. It's not helping my cause or the media's cause just in general for more access, because it's been prying teeth. I mean, it's been rough here in 21. And that's where I was very grateful to them that I was able to get 9 assistant coaches to be able to get interviews with them. And I'll get Rob Wenger here in the fall. But it's like,
is that a joke?
Like, I can't blame Fleck. I am going to get Wenger here.
Okay.
Well, I'm at least going to request Wenger in the fall.
Okay.
Because I want to be able to talk Trickett and a bunch of other things.
Sure.
That's the reason that I didn't request him here this spring, was I usually do assistant coaches in the spring ball and then fall camp. I get them twice a year. So I want to have, you know, adequate things to ask them about. And I didn't really have adequate things to ask Rob Wenger about.
Okay. Let's. And just before we get off this topic, when we talk about 2021, just in general, like, all sports media has had limited access, right? Because the teams have more control, because they have things, they have these protocols that they have to go through, which means it's Zoom, so they can give you just the players or whatever, right? This is all over the place. So it's all limited. And slowly, as things ease up, they're going to have a little bit less control, and the media is going to have a little bit more autonomy to, you know, search for stories and, you know, find them and tell good stories. And, you know, the teams won't be able to control the narrative as much. But at the end of the day, like, you know, 2021 is kind of a blah.
Yeah.
Well, 2020 and 2021.
Yeah. We'll see how it continues to hopefully change for the better for us in the Gopher football media as the world continues to open up and more people continue to get vaccinated. So
this is
D Hansen.
Oh, come on. You had the last question. This is one of the better ones. This is Brad 42, your RPO. Mm-hmm. What is the quarterback reading when he decides to give or throw?
I mean, I can take it. You want to take it? I mean, I feel like this one's pretty self-explanatory.
I do think it's self-explanatory, but I was kind of hoping that you'd go out of complete left field and say, like, obviously the back judge.
Well, he's reading the side judge. I mean, that's why he's looking directly at the side. I mean, if he sees the side judge continue to run, he's going to run. If he sees the side judge continue to stay at the line of scrimmage, well, he's going to stay at the line of scrimmage. He's reading, in theory, if it's a true RPO, there should be an unblocked man at the line of scrimmage. It's probably a seven technique or a linebacker there. And if he sees the eyes, yeah, if he sees the eyes of whoever that unblocked defender, cheat in on the running back, in theory, he should pull and take it around the end. If he sees that the end is just focused on him, he should give to the running back. So we will see. Again, I spent, I was able to interview Mike Sanford at Dangerous Man, actually, in Northeast there. That was where we met up to get that interview done. And that's where you can read it on Gopher Illustrated. I believe it's free. I don't remember. If it's not, it's a buck to read it. So that's where he talked about it. I mean, they've had discussions. Tanner, Mike Sanford, Zach Anikstad, that they want running quarterbacks. Ethan Kaliak-Manis, who was just named the Gatorade Player of the Year in Illinois, he's a good athlete. You look at Jacob Knuth, their 2022 commit, who's going to be on campus here next week. He's a very good athlete. So they want to have an athlete be able to run the ball at that position, and I think you really do start to be able to see that here this fall, and that kind of leads into D. Hansen, 32, saying, what type of leash will Tanner be on this year? Seems like at times last year a switch would have been warranted. What do you think, Luke?
I think that this ties into very tightly into a different question that I don't have right in front of me, but I'll summarize it. Sure. Will PJ Fleck get away from trestle ball this year? I think that the leash will be exactly what it's been, and it will not change, even though they say they want a running quarterback. I think they will be as conservative as possible going forward, a la trestle ball.
I would say Tanner's got a long leash, but I'd also say if Tanner struggles for, say, we're middle of October and Tanner hasn't looked.
Oh, do you mean, did I interpret the question wrong? Do you mean leash like to be yanked or leash like to run? Because I was thinking it was to run.
To be yanked. I was wondering where you were going with
this. I thought it was leash like keep it or run it. Oh, my bad. Because we talked about that. Like,
I mean, we can lead into your trestle ball one too, but.
Oh, my bad.
I mean, if it gets to be like October timeframe and Tanner isn't looking great, I think Zach Anikstad, I feel that Mike Sanford really believes that that Anikstad could be the guy. I mean, that would kind of be the plan because I don't expect to see Tanner Morgan here after the 21 season. And that's where Anikstad's probably the guy to start for at least 22 if he's still here. Yeah, we'll see how it all kind of plays out with the quarterback dominoes. But, I mean, I think Tanner's got a pretty long leash. I think that Sanford knows what Tanner can do now. Tanner knows more about what Sanford wants. But, I mean, I don't blame D. Hansen for asking that question. And then to yours about trestle ball, I don't think he ever gets away from it.
No.
And maybe that'll go down. Now we'll see how it all kind of plays out because yes, PJ was very successful with it at Western, which is why he got the Minnesota job. And then you see some wins that like against Auburn where Minnesota is able to trestle ball the hell out of it. And for those of you who don't know what trestle ball is and you're like, what the heck are these guys talking about? You also have to remember who was PJ Fleck's one of his first coaching jobs. It was Jim Tressel, I believe, at Ohio State, where Jim Tressel just loved to play incredibly conservative when they had a lead or just kind of in general on offense.
This assumes, though, and then we should talk about this in some detail. This assumes that you have a pretty lights out defense too, which Ohio State teams have had in the past, right? Now I'm not saying. And it works a lot. It's a lot easier when you have super high end talents like the Terrell Pryors and the, name whoever they've had, that can just win athletically too, right? That are just difference makers. Now, I'm not saying that you can't do it with inferior talent, but you're just trying to risk mitigate as much as possible in trestle ball, which I think I think that the range of opportunity to win games you got to take some chances if you're Minnesota, especially against.
We have spent years on this podcast about this very topic.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that I can't stand. There are absolutely, I mean, you look at the Maryland game last year, you talk about trying to play trestle ball, you need to have a good defense. Like, Minnesota's defense last year was horrible.
Which was reason to get away from it.
And Fleck still wanted to play it against Maryland. They end up losing a 3-score lead and they lose the football game. Like, I just don't see him getting away from it because for, you know, all the times where, you know, you want Minnesota to just rip it down the field and whatnot, I get it. But then Fleck in his mind will go back to like something like the Auburn game, where Minnesota is able to just trestle ball it away in the fourth quarter and win the football game. Like, it's just kind of the way PJ Fleck has done it in his time now as a head coach, was I think is year 9 or year 10 now that he's been head coach between Western and Minnesota. So I'd love to tell you that they're going to get away from it,
but
I just don't see that.
Yeah,
happening.
He's all about an identity, right? And whether that's his culture, I don't see him getting away from it either.
I don't either.
Okay, I'm trying to come up. There are so many
good questions. I got one.
Questions. Okay.
Luke Fox 059. We already touched on this. I'm going to try and be fair here. I'm going to try to be quick. And I say this, I feel like every podcast, so we can get through as many as we possibly can. So, Luke, if I start getting long-winded, just interrupt me. You got it?
Okay.
So, Luke 059, what dates and time frames do you think we should start seeing a flood of commitments start to come through for 2022? Yada 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 yada.
I cleared my throat right in the middle of it. It was perfect. I didn't mute myself.
Thank you for not shutting off your
mic
there.
Yeah, we're
real professionals here on this podcast.
Yeah.
I already talked about it in the opening. I think you're gonna see a slew of commitments. I think you'll see the class double in size, if not triple in size. Now they're only at 5 right now. But you're going to start to see it, I think, June 2nd until like June 28th. I think the entire month of June is going to be bonkers because there's a bunch of camps, which means there's a bunch of live evaluations, which means there's going to be a bunch of offers potentially going out. Plus, they've got official visits set. And I think as I look at Gopher Illustrated's, what I got pinned on the message board, I think I have something like 22 official visitors confirmed as of right now for June 11th, June 18th, and June 22nd. So that would be when I would start to be on the site clicking F5, F5, F5.
All right. That wasn't long-winded at all, so I don't know.
See, I'm doing better.
You're learning.
All right, what do you got?
Okay. What is the one game on Minnesota's schedule you think the coaches want to win badly this year?
Iowa.
I was going to say, I would agree with you, but I was going to say all of them.
Well, the answer is all of them.
Okay.
But they are well aware. I can assure you, PJ Fleck, well aware, he is an absolute goose egg in the win column against Iowa. And the way that game ended last year, where Iowa pulls their starters, Minnesota doesn't. Minnesota burns a timeout at the end in like a 5-score game. And then some of the comments Ferentz made afterwards, like, number one, they want to get the goose egg off their back because they haven't beat Iowa. They know if they want to win the West, they got to get through Iowa. They know they haven't won in Kinnick in a long time. And Iowa and Minnesota's head coaches and their coaching staffs don't like each other at all. Like, the Ferentzes, they don't like Fleck. And Fleck staff, they don't like Iowa. So I'd say the Iowa game.
Okay. I'm going to rattle off some more here while I have them. Has the coaching staff made any permanent process changes as a result of the pandemic? Examples could include how they run practice, recruiting, scheduling time off, etc.
Permanent changes.
I got to think the virtual visits are going to stick.
That's what I was going to say, is virtual visits are going to be here to stay. It's something to where last year they had to do them because they knew they weren't going to get them in physically on campus with them. But I think that's kind of been the next step now in the recruiting process, is you offer a kid and then you try to get him on a virtual visit so that he can sit down for an hour with mom and dad or whoever guardians are. And they can talk to the position coach, talk to the coordinator, talk to the head coach, talk with the recruiting guys about, you know, what campus is like. They different things like that. So. And as far as like the way practice is run and whatnot, I don't think it's really going to change much. But I think virtual visits would be the biggest thing that is a permanent change that comes out of this pandemic.
Okay. Do any Minnesota GAs seem like rising stars in the coaching profession? Can you shout out someone that we know nothing about?
Oh man, I got to pull up the GAs so I don't butcher I don't butcher their names, because there's a couple of them. I think the one that comes off the top of my head that actually I think stepped in as a position coach, what is Danny Collins. I think he at some point here in the last couple of years, because of some kind of weird scenario, he
can you think of a GA? I think Mike Sherrills was the last GA to go to a position coach, right?
Well, Greg Harbaugh. I was gonna, you know, this kind of leads me back to earlier, where if Simon were to leave,
yeah,
for whatever reason, Greg Harbaugh was a GA here at Minnesota. Now he's the wide receivers coach at Western. I would believe that that would be shortly done. That if something ever happens to Matt Simon, Greg Harbaugh would become the wide receivers coach at Minnesota. But I would, well, I guess Danny Collins isn't a GA anymore. He's been here so long. But I, that type of guy, that I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Danny Collins be someone that gets a position coaching job at the Power 5 level here in the near future.
Okay. This is something I know you want to probably rant on. I don't know if you saw this question. How big of an issue is our below market assistant coaching pay pool?
I mean, it's an issue. Again, I don't want to, I've spent a lot of time on this before, and
I know this has been on Gopher Illustrated some too. So yeah, this is kind of
like, the reality is, I believe the position coaching pool for Minnesota in terms of where they compare in the Big Ten is, like, out of the 14 teams, they're probably around 12.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you look at the guys that have left, like Jim Panagos goes to Rutgers and he gets a salary double. Broad Chance goes to Oregon, gets a 100K increase. And it's like, Minnesota's not even competitive, like, to try and keep him in that instance. And that's where the next Fleck extension, if and when it comes, like, PJ, you make 4.6. I mean, that's a lot of money. That's like top 25 among college football coaches money. How about getting it written into your contract that, like Jerry Kill did, I believe, that your assistant coach pay pool needs to be top half of the Big Ten, whatever that is. I mean, again, that's not saying that Minnesota is going to compete with Ohio State with this multi-million dollar assistant coaching pool salary, but it's like, whatever seventh is, like, let's boost it up, say $750,000, that maybe you can compete to keep some of these assistant coaches here a little bit longer than that and pay some of these guys in the recruiting staff a little bit more, things like that. So I think it's an issue. And I think we're going to find out here after this off season, if Joe Harris-Simiak does get another job as a head coach somewhere, and we'll see what kind of happens after that. But I think it's an issue. And again, I get it in terms of, I feel like I can hear Eric Vigo in my ear saying, well, it's about what market value is. And if, you know, it's whatever, if they're going to say yes to that amount, is that going to change the winning and losing?
I mean,
no.
At the end of the day, like you and I have talked about this at length, non-recorded, right? I think it's a little like saying, like, okay, just comparing to the Big Ten, it's a little bit hard because, you know, where do you think we stack up nationally, right? Say the Power Five, right? That's probably something you got to look at. And I know that, you know, some of these guys are going to top end schools like Oregon, right? They have a ton of money. I don't know about Rutgers. Like,
losing a guy to Rutgers where he gets a 100K bump in salary. It's like, again, like, what does it result in, like, more wins or losses? It's hard to say, if you could get like a better recruiter on staff, because you're going to pay him more money than his current institution, then yeah, you're going to go get that guy to help you try to elevate your talent acquisition. So those are kind of my thoughts. The new wide receiver you asked, you've been the conductor for the Brevin Spanford hype train for a while now. Aside from him, what's another name that's not getting much attention but is looking to break out, according to me?
I already said, boy, Daniel Jackson.
I think that's a fine pick. I'm trying to think of like an obscure-ish one that, you know, it's got like not a high likelihood of happening, but it's like, if I hit, it's not like anybody's going to remember anyway, because the only thing people remember now is Hank Epke and Mo Ibrahim.
Yeah, you just, but the thing with Hank Epke is you just, you really sold that for a while. So if you get one, if it's just one time
man.
Here,
yeah,
if it's just one time here, nobody will remember except for, you know, one of the people.
Hasn't been getting much attention that's going to break out. I mean, I think Trey Potts is going to be an absolute stud. If you told me Trey Potts is going to stay on the field, I'd tell you Trey Potts is without a doubt the next bell cow back at the University of Minnesota. So I'm all aboard that train. I'm all aboard. I mean, I can't get aboard the Daniel Jackson train too. It's tougher defensively just because they return like 10 guys. It's like, I'd say Boye Mafe, but I don't know what, like, I think Boye Mafe is going to have double digit sacks and double digit tackles for loss this fall. I mean, I think that's a breakout in a big way. So
wait, isn't double digit sacks double digit tackles for loss?
Yes, but I mean, say he gets like 13 tackles for loss and like 11 sacks. So they're not mutually exclusive per se ish, but you know what I'm trying to say.
All right, sure. Okay. This one, I do want to talk about defense because, again, my biggest concern is defense, right? This has been my biggest concern during the PJ Fleck era. I think if they're going to have success, they have to be better defensively. They were in large part successful in 2019 because of their defensive success. So there are about around 12 players on the team that played defense that signed in 2020. Which one or ones will be first or second team all Big Ten someday?
So I'm confused. Am I taking from the 2020 recruiting class or just from the guys who played on the field in 2020? I think he means from the field.
No, that it says that play defense and signed in 2020.
Okay. I mean, here's what I'll say is Minnesota thinks they hit the mega load on defensive line in 20 and 21. And
let's broaden the question. Let's just go. Let's just say who could be, because it's really hard in one class to have multiple guys, right? So let's just say who defensively do we think could be a first or second team all Big Ten
from the 2020 class?
No, I'd basically say anyone defensively, because they didn't have anybody worthy last year.
I think D'Angelo Carter is going to be a monster. Whenever the final season is for D'Angelo Carter, I think he's going to be what we thought Steven Richardson was going to be. And I think Steven Richardson was pretty damn good, but he started off great and then it just didn't click for him in his elder years. And that's
I mean, he was kind of a one-man wrecking crew too.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of help, but I think D'Angelo Carter's going to be stud. So I would say him. Do you have anybody that comes to mind?
I haven't seen him play, but the hype behind Wally, or is it? It's Wally, right? Justin Wally. That's a lot of hype. So from purely again social media and or message board media hype, I'm curious because I've never seen a player hyped as much as he's been defensively.
I'd say Gage Keys too. I know that Wilt loves Gage Keys. Now it sucks that he got hurt and had that shoulder deal that knocked him out for the spring, but again, I can name a bunch of different defensive linemen, which is great, because if Minnesota's right and they really did hit home runs on a couple of these D-line classes, where is the Big Ten, or more specifically the Big Ten West, won and lost? It's in the trenches. And if you got a damn good defensive line, it probably means you're going to be in a lot of football games. So I'll stick with those two. I think D'Angelo Carter and Gage Keys are going to be pretty damn good by the time they leave here.
This is an interesting question. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, mostly because I don't think it's an okay question. No criticism to the person that wrote it. But the question was, what do you make of Marshall, Minnesota producing more Power 5 talent than most suburbs in Minneapolis and St. Paul? Luck of the draw, or there's something more developmental aspect going on there?
I don't know. I mean, that's a great question.
It's a good question, but I mean, it goes in waves, right? Like, I feel like, you know, there are schools that, you know, just have a string and then they have no one, right? I think of like...
Or they have, like, here's, I think an interesting point would be to make this. Like, you look at how good the basketball talent is in this state right now.
Yeah.
And it primarily it's located, I think, around the metro. And it's like a lot of these kids could have probably been D1 basketball. Like Trey Holloman is a great example. Like Trey Holloman, I have him and I bang the table for him as the number one recruit in the state on the football side of things, because I think he'd be a stud corner. But he's probably, I mean, there's a high likelihood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, in Marshall, is that just a program that you get these really good athletes, but you just mold them into football players instead of hockey players or instead of basketball players?
Or they've seen guys be successful in those sports, so right. they lean that way, right?
Because you got like Trey Lance, Blaze Andrews, YA Black. You got Dalen Hessert here in this class. I mean, Reese Winkleman is doing some really good things out at South Dakota State too. So I think it's just kind of just the way that program has been developed, that Marshall, Minnesota has a lot of good athletes and they've been just kind of molded into football players, where other schools maybe kind of have them be basketball or hockey players or different things like that.
Fun fact, I have a relative that was the coach at Southwest Minnesota State a long time ago, but in the Marshall area for a long time. He was the head coach there. I know. Just uplifting my pedigree minorly. I'll say this though. I think there are towns like this though, that where you see, you know, a string of years in a row where they have
Caledonia comes to mind too.
Well, like
Caledonia
even think,
has put,
I'll age myself a little bit here, but think of like Hutchinson. They had two guys go to Nebraska, right? This was
Hutch is another program where you don't see a lot of guys come out in other sports. They're really good athletes, usually play football.
Yeah.
Caledonia, they really have a lot of guys. I mean, Eli King's going to play basketball, but and if he wanted to play football, he'd be up there for maybe the top football player in the state. So it's just kind of what I think it's just the way that the different high schools develop different athletes.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should mention too that, like, you know, there's a lot of hockey talent that, you know, could be really good football players too, that very likely they go hockey.
Jake Kraslev comes to mind.
Yeah. They go hockey because this is the, you know, they're in the state of hockey, right? And there could be more football players there. I do think that there's a dent in the number of available D1 football players because of the success of basketball and hockey in this state.
Sure. Austin Gopher asks, if this season is considered successful, which coach is going to be the most difficult to retain for 22?
I think you already answered this question. It's Harris Simiak.
It's Harris Simiak, because I don't think you can pay him, because I don't think the pay really matters. I think the man wants to be a head coach again.
But I think too, to that point, is like he's already got success at the FCS level that, right, you know, he's got the resume, and now he's been around and seen a successful, well, again, successful is relative, but he's been around a successful program. So now he can say, like, hey, I've seen how to be successful at a high level in addition to having success at the FCS. So that just seems to be the no brainer here.
And that's where, again, I just think like there's nothing you can potentially give him in that instance if a MAC job becomes open again and they want to hire him, because it's not about the money in that instance. It's about him wanting to continue with his career aspirations of becoming a Power 5 head coach one day. And to do that, you have to be able to pay your dues, and he's got to go to the MAC or somewhere else, or the Mountain West or wherever, to do that kind of at a higher level.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe we'll close out with this one, unless you have some other ones that we
didn't
get to.
I want to get through. There's a few more I've seen here. Caleb Brewster.
I got one I want to end on. So don't pick. It's D-A-G-G. It was 9 hours ago.
All right, I won't pick that one. Okay. I think this is an interesting one. Caleb Brewster asks, since you began covering the team, and this will be year 10 for me, what's the biggest what-if in your mind regarding Gopher football? You know,
the biggest
what-if? Close results, game didn't go your way, injuries. I think two come to mind. One would be, what if Minnesota's offense under Jerry Kill actually was viable? Because, like, I look back at what was the bowl game in Florida? I can't remember the bowl game in Florida's name.
What? No, okay. I got the what if there. Like, what if they would have stuck with Philip Nelson and not gone, like, okay, we are all in on Leidner, and you had a second option there? I don't know the actual backstory there, so I'm not trying to speculate like I do, but it was just really odd how he ended up moving on. And I know he had the legal issue, but arguably he was, when all was said and done, he was the better quarterback. Eastern Carolina.
I know who Philip Nelson is. I mean, to me, it's just more so like generally. Imagine if they had an offense to go with the defenses that.
Yeah. Imagine they didn't keep Zimborowski around, which, by the way, he's at Kansas now.
He is at Kansas now. But my point being is this, like, you look out at the Citrus Bowl team on defense, like, look at that defense.
Oh, yeah.
It's Devondre Campbell, Damian Wilson, Eric Murray, Breann Body Calhoun, and a bunch of other guys, Cedric Thompson. I mean, you have like six NFL guys on defense. Mm-hmm. And yet you couldn't field a competent quarterback, a competent anything in the passing game or even an offensive line.
You had an NFL tight end, right? And you had was Justin Cobbs running at that point? I think so. In that Citrus Bowl game?
I think it was David Cobb.
David Cobb's call. I just met
is Justin Cobbs coming back from the basketball team? Jesus, Luke. Where you at?
I'm back in 2009, 2010, the glory days. Oh, what could there's a big what could have been. What if Royce White could have played? What if Justin Cobb sticks around? What if Trevor Mbakwe is cleared to play that year? I'm telling you, man, that could have been an elite team.
So that would be the biggest what if for me is if Hill could have just figured it out on offense. I mean, that would have been a fantastic, fantastic team.
What if Brewster's year they actually win that like seventh game and they beat Northwestern?
I was in high school at the time and I wasn't paying attention, I'm going to be honest. Okay. So I don't even know.
I think I was maybe in college at that point. I think I was still in high school, maybe two, but boy, that was disappointing.
The other one would be the 2019 Wisconsin game. I mean, you can't not. I mean, it's the perfect storm where you get game day, you have Wisconsin at home, you go up big early on the post to Bateman, and then you just shit the bet for the final 40 minutes of the game.
I know last year was kind of a wash in a super weird season, but what if they wouldn't have been just awful against Michigan? They were awful defensively.
Okay, say they're not, and they lose by 3 instead of 33 or whatever it was. Like, what does that matter?
No, I'm just saying, like, what if they would have won that game? Because that was, you know, that raises the profile a little bit more nationally than a nationally televised game. College game day was there. Maybe you got all the fringe benefit. But, like, I'm just saying, if they won that game, they were probably a better football team. Oh, man, that was so bad.
Michael Vinters, let's say someone from the future tells you Fleck's leaving for a different job within the next 10 years, where is he going?
This is, like, a constant question in Gopher Twitter and in Gopher Illustrated. Like,
so he also says we've been operating under the assumption that Fleck's dream job is Notre Dame. I have never once said that, and I've never once heard that. There is no way Notre Dame ever would take Fleck.
Yeah, I think people have to understand that wherever Fleck goes, the row the boat brand
and
goes.
That is exactly why, like, Notre Dame would never take him because they don't want to. Like, he can't just get rid of row the boat with it. I mean, you have to go to, like, or even Oregon. I mean, I think probably Oregon or USC would probably be two that come to mind. That
I don't think either.
Told me Fleck was going somewhere. That's probably where. Or even say the Michigan job becomes open and Harbaugh finally gets fired. Like, I can't see Michigan going from go blue to row the boat.
Yeah, I don't see. You're not trying to convince like a fan base about row the boat. You're trying to convince boosters, right? And are boosters going to take that on? Like, you know, they control a lot of the purse strings, not all of them, but, you know, a lot of the purse strings there. I can't see Michigan doing that. I cannot see Oregon doing that. I also can't see USC doing that, man. Maybe UCLA.
Maybe. I would, like, if you told me Fleck wasn't here, then where is he going? I would tell you Pac-12, but let's do a few quick ones and we'll get to yours and we'll get you out of here because I know you got to go be a dad and stuff like that. Hyper 131, let's keep it quick. All right, Luke, yes or no? Does Chris Ottman-Bell hit the 1,000-yard mark this season?
No, but he'll be in 900 yards.
I'm going to say he just eclipses it because you get 13 games, say 1,000 yards. What is that, like 80, 85 yards a game? I think that is entirely doable. I know I'm rolling through a lot of recruiting questions here, folks. I'm not going to answer those in the pod. just because I want to keep that behind the paywall, because this podcast doesn't pay the bills. You know what does? Gopher Illustrated. Let me see here. Terrell Smith.
Paywall Burnsy.
Yeah, it'd be like that. Sorwag. Is this the one? No, this isn't the one. What would it take, if anything, for the quarterback to be able to audible to line of scrimmage, to be able to audible without looking to the sideline? I mean, you'd have to say that Fleck and Sanford trust, I just don't think in this offense that Fleck runs that the quarterback is ever going to have that level of trust in this offense.
I don't know collegiately where they have that much where quarterbacks have that much control. I don't think quarterbacks have that control. I could be completely wrong about this. I don't think they have that control like they used to.
Maybe. I don't think in this offense that they do.
I don't think they do either, but I don't think that they do nationally. I don't think quarterbacks have as much control as they used to in the day. Especially with the technology.
Major Dundee asks, do you believe in Bigfoot Luke?
Probably not. I mean, I don't believe
in Bigfoot. And you're talking to a guy who's got size 17 feet. I know, good for me. But, I believe in aliens. Do you believe in aliens? There is another intelligent life force in this universe.
Oh, probably, yeah. I think, do you believe in Bigfoot? Can we get a definition of Bigfoot, please? I don't know how your definition of Bigfoot might be different than mine. But I'm going to say probably not.
Foggy guy, do you believe that Fleck feels pressure from Coyle to recruit Minnesota better? And then he lists a bunch of guys.
I would say no.
I would say no as well.
I would say that he probably needs to do a better job, relatively speaking. But, it's not the same as basketball. It's not the same as hockey. There is a lot of talent here. So per capita and what you can pull, you probably should be doing better in basketball and hockey.
He lists a bunch of guys like Malman, Sullivan, Ratzlaff. And I look at all these guys that he lists and I'm thinking to myself, how many of these are truly swings and misses? On the basketball side of things, you can, take your pick from the last 3 years of Patino, Dawson Garcia. And I'm not even talking about the Suggses and the Chet Holmgrens of the world, but they go on to have a lot of success at wherever they are. And that I look at Evan Hull goes to Northwestern. Minnesota doesn't offer him. Evan Hall's been fine, but is Evan Hall the difference maker to get you over the edge in that aspect?
The offensive lineman that went to Notre Dame, did he pan out?
Quinn Carroll hasn't even played at Notre Dame.
I was going to say, I'd like to look at this list and just see how many of them actually panned out at other schools. If the jury's still out, the jury's still out, right? If they haven't played a game. But, to a certain extent, I know that they've passed on a lot and they haven't necessarily panned out. So,
sure. Even in the example of Evan Hall versus, in that instance, it would be versus Jason Williamson and Trey Potts. I think Williamson was the correct take there, even though it doesn't look like it's potentially going to pan out because of injuries. And I think Trayson Potts is a stud.
You look at a Bernhardt at Nebraska, he's played, right? But Minnesota's had some pretty good offensive lineman too.
Bernhardt. I mean, they would take Bernhardt. I think, but
yeah,
Bernhardt back in it. But Craig McDonald, he's played some at Ames, and that's great. Or Aiden Bowman. I mean, you list a lot of guys that it's we'll see. I mean, it's too soon to really know. But if they weren't recruiting, I think as well as they think they are, we'll kind of see how it pans.
Is Ratzlaff going to play? Is he going to play football? Is that for sure?
Yeah, he's going to play. Yep.
He's going to give up hockey.
He gave up hockey. Yep.
Really?
He's no longer a Minnesota hockey commit. He is a Wisconsin football commit. Really? Last one before we get to – is yours the J-Train 9911?
No.
Okay. So he asked this, and this will be the last one before we get to Luke's, and we'll get you guys out of here, is do you think this team is a bit underrated in terms of outside predictions and perceptions right now?
I think
– here's where I'll tell you. So I saw that DraftKings released their over-under for the win totals this season. for college football. What do you think Minnesota's was?
I don't have a clue, but I'll probably... So, okay, they're playing 12 games, right? I got to remember that. So 12 games, right?
I think in this instance, they're only going to pay out regular season, so yeah.
Okay, yeah. So 12 games, I'd say... So you're asking for an over-under. I'll go 7.5?
7. It was an even 7 when I saw it released.
Okay.
And I like... I think they're on. I think my over now should be. I get it if people are a little skeptical because this defense was horrible and the offense was all right. And you lose Bateman, and can this passing offense move? So I think to his point, I mean, I think they're a little underrated because I think Northwestern lost a ton of people and they lost a ton of coaches. So, and I have some questions about Iowa on the line side of things, which I never thought I would say, but it seemingly that's where the kind of the steam is in Iowa City, is that maybe they're a little iffy on the offensive and defensive lines compared to previous years. And then Wisconsin is Wisconsin, but in that instance, 7 wins. I mean, so you're not going to win Ohio. We'll see what happens against Ohio State. I'm not holding my breath there. Then you got to go on the road to Colorado. You have a couple of gimmies at home, and then you start Big Ten play. I mean, I think they are a little bit underrated nationally, but again, this team's got to show up like they did in 2019, because I think everybody remembers the good parts of 2019 where the Penn State and the Auburn wins, but Luke, I mean,
they were bad in the
they were incredibly lucky in September against Georgia Southern and South Dakota State and Fresno State, where you don't win those games, you don't build your momentum, and you don't get to where you got to in November, December.
And they got better and better and better as the season went on, for sure.
Right.
Okay, just to close out, I really liked this question. Mostly, I've never been to a road football game before. I don't know. Have you, Ryan?
If I've been to a road football game?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I meant as a fan, not as a writer.
No, I don't think, well... I've been to like a road NFL game or two.
But no, I meant to a road Gopher game.
As a non-writer, I don't think I don't think I have been, because my family wasn't huge. I mean, they were Gopher fans when I was growing up, but I don't think I ever went to a Gopher football game.
Okay,
growing up.
Okay, so let's just take this from the fan perspective for you and the media member perspective. Okay. If you could hypothetically pick a Gopher road game to attend versus any opponent / stadium in the country, what would you pick? And so I'm going to exclude national championship game. I'm going to exclude like a bowl game, right?
Because I was about to say the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, because I think that's the obvious.
To be able to go to the Rose Bowl, go to the Rose Bowl parade and stuff like that.
Exactly. That's the obvious. I think they're real obvious.
So this is a hypothetical game in a hypothetical away stadium.
Hypothetical away stadium can be... could be non-conference or conference game, doesn't matter.
All right, give me a second to think. While I can go. What are you gonna pick, Washington?
No, I've seen enough. I've seen enough Husky games. I don't need to see the Gophers play the Huskies. I do a lot of work with the University of Michigan. I have been by that stadium a number of times. It's massive, and everyone I talk to talks about the tailgates at the golf course, and I want to see if it lives up to the hype or if it's all just talk. And I think it would be fun to be in arguably the highest attendance stadium in the country just to see what the experience is like. I've heard that actually watching a game there isn't that great. But I think since I've been around there quite a bit, for work purposes, I think that would be really fun to go to Michigan. If I have to pick a non-conference opponent, I really want to see the Gophers play Notre Dame in my lifetime. I think that would be really fun.
I can't stand Notre Dame, to be quite honest.
I can't stand them either, which is kind of why I want to see it.
I couldn't stand like St. Thomas Academy or Hill Murray growing up as a Tartan kid, and I still really can't.
I can't stand
St. Thomas, the university, because I was a St. Olaf kid growing up, and before I transferred to you. I can't stand Notre Dame. I just can't stand that team.
I'd love to see the Gophers roll in with their chrome dome into.
Oh, that'd be the ultimate troll.
I think that'd be really funny. But Okay. What do you got?
All right. If I had to pick a game, so here's my disclaimer with this. Like in my head, my thought process is like, would I love to see Minnesota go play, you know, Bama as a fan in Bama? Sure. But I also want to see like Minnesota have like a viable chance here. So I would say, and this is maybe a weird one, but I love the state of Florida and I love the Florida Keys more specifically, but I would love to see them like take on Miami.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. Because
I think Big Ten versus Miami of Florida, like I think it implodes really quickly if Minnesota gets rolling in Miami. And yeah. I'm a big South Florida guy.
Would love to see how torn Ryan James would be.
Oh, first of all, he'd be able to barely walk into the stadium because he would be absolutely lit up from that tailgate, wherever the heck it is. So, that'd be a lot of fun. In terms of Big Ten, I got to go there as a fan. I've never been to the Ohio State Stadium. It's one of a few I haven't been to yet. And again, that comes into the whole Minnesota got a chip chair and a chance. But I think Ohio State there, because I look at like the other stadiums here and I've been to them, like Illinois, no, Indiana, no. I've already been to Kinnick, been to Wisconsin, Maryland and Rutgers don't do anything for me. I guess Michigan in that aspect, Michigan State doesn't do anything. Northwestern's is a dump.
Sometime we should go to Ann Arbor together. That's what we'll do.
Sure, we can do that. That's fine. So I think that would probably be – I'd love to see Minnesota-Miami and kind of see Big Ten versus the ACC there. And
I love that.
Be able to go down there and get a couple of days of charter fishing in, catching some mahi or catching some snapper and having some fun with that.
I'd love that because it would be U of M versus U of M. I love that, but –
That's the funniest part is it's like, like you talk about like the U and like for people in Minnesota here, you say the U and everybody knows you're talking about the University of Minnesota. Like you leave the state of Minnesota, you say, yeah, I'm going, you know, my niece is going to the U and they're like, they're going to Miami. And they're like, no, the U, the Minnesota. And they're like, that's not, you know, what are you even talking about?
Right.
So, yeah, I'd love to see UM versus UM. Last thing I'd say is this. If I didn't get to your question, we didn't answer it, and you still want me to tackle it, just drop me a note on that thread and I'll answer it.
And just note, I don't think your questions are hot garbage. I was just making a joke.
So I think the next time we'll talk is probably sometime in June. I'm sure there'll be a ton of recruiting stuff to kind of get into. And like I said, I expect Minnesota to double, if not triple, their commitment list. And it's going to be crazy here come June. So like I said, throughout this podcast, just bite the bullet now. It's $1. And if you don't like it by the end of June, which I can't believe that you would, you know, you can cancel and whatnot, but we are as big as we've ever been. You know, we got a couple thousand members now, which is incredible to me for a team that went 3-4 last year. So we greatly, greatly appreciate each and every one of you listeners and each and every one of you GoPro Illustrated members.
All right. I want to thank you guys for listening. It's been fun to chat. We'll do this again soon. And go Gophers.